Not
Are
working,
you working
today.
You working today?
Yeah, I'm working on a podcast.
Oh.
This is my job now.
You quit?
No.
Okay.
Welcome to the Pretty Dead Boys. This is a podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max.
Whew. You doing all right?
I'm here. I'm ready. I'm ready to record a podcast.
Why are you all huffy?
It's a quick one. We gotta squeeze in this recording time before you go into work. So.
That's valid.
Yeah. So I scrambled here as quickly as I could back to the Pretty Dead Boys castle. had to hop the moat in one go. It was wild, dude.
I mean, we're doing the rare morning recording.
Yeah.
Which is always fun.
We're getting to a point where we're getting so good, we're kind of professionals at this. And so we replaced our day jobs. This is what we do full time for $50 a month on Patreon. That's how we get by. How you doing, Max? We're in a new year. We've had holidays. We've had all of that stuff. It's behind us. You're surviving?
My tummy is hurting. Pretty bad because I had some milk recently.
Yeah, you had some.
It's not a good idea.
Some cereal and milk.
Yeah,
you're almost foolish. You're almost 30. You can't be doing that shit anymore.
It was s'mores cereal. Did I tell you that?
You did. And I was charmed by how childish it was.
Stupid. It's like Golden Grahams and Cocoa Puffs and marshmallow bits.
Man, that sounds like heaven. I try to stay away from sweets in general, but s'mores flavored anything gets me every time. I love s'mores. That combination is so good.
Graham. Dope. Yeah.
Graham. Marshmallow. Chocolate.
Chalky.
A little smoky flavor. Oof.
Oh, well, that's what I do too. I have the s'mores cereal and then I just pour a little bit of liquid smoke in there.
Like what Burger King does with their burgers.
You
just spray it on.
Flame broiled. No, I've been good. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm coming off of the tail end of 3 consecutive days of working at 5 in the morning. Last night was the first night I slept 8 hours in a really long time. So I'm coming out of the grogginess now. But once I get going, I'm going to be super witty and have all kinds of dick jokes and like all this fresh material for our podcast.
Well, you are currently drinking coffee out of a skull, so.
That's true. Have I ever told you about this mug?
No.
Wouldn't incriminate myself in any kind of crime on this podcast, so I would never admit to stealing it from a local Asian bistro.
No!
So that's not what happened. Officially speaking?
Fuck off.
I've never done a crime like that, and I would never do that.
Did they give it to you?
No, I told you it's not what happened. But hypothetically, I just left with it in my hand, and that was it.
Just cruised.
Theoretically speaking.
It's a skull, so it's very cool.
Yeah,
so.
It's like a tiki mug sort of style, too. It's great. I love this mug. It's got really weird grooves inside that make it like difficult to clean. Sometimes coffee gets trapped in there. I don't think it was intended for coffee. I think it was intended for sugary alcoholic beverages.
Uh-huh.
But that's not what I use it for. I drink coffee out of it because I got to stay awake and we got a job to do. Specifically, our job today is to podcast about death. Max, you prepared something for us to discuss and learn about.
I did.
What'd you prepare for us?
So I was a couple nights ago, I was eating.
What?
And I was having dessert and I had a nice slice of pie.
Mm.
And eating that pie got me thinking about death, and it,
as you do,
got me thinking about coffins.
Okay.
Which does relate, and I will show you how it relates, but just to clean some house up at the top, this episode is a listener suggestion from Caroline, who, from what I know, is not in the Facebook group or the Discord. So, as far as you know, she doesn't exist.
Oh, well, I'm glad she does.
She does. She does. So, thanks, Caroline.
Yeah, thanks, Caroline.
This suggestion. So, let's crack into coffins and explain to you how they relate to pie with the official Pre-Dead Boys crack into the topic moment, brought to you today by La Kroger.
Thank you for dragging the seltzer to the castle.
Yeah, no worries. Did you know that there's a difference between seltzer water and sparkling water?
No, not really. What's the difference?
Seltzer water is artificially carbonated.
Okay.
By, like, injecting air into it. Sparkling water, like Perrier, is naturally carbonated with, like, salt or sodium or something.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Salt water.
Salt water.
Y'all been drinking salt water this entire time and didn't even know it.
Fools. I can't really believe that we've made it this far into recording without doing an episode on coffins. We've, like, touched on them.
And we have touched them. Yeah. We've touched coffins.
That's true. And we've done, you know, we've done a lot of coffin adjacent stuff. So I figured, like, what's one more? We'll do more coffin adjacent.
Yeah, let's stop dancing around coffins and really, like, give them their time in the spotlight.
Figure we do, like, coffin tech. So, Dorian, what are coffins? And where does this word come from?
Well, I'm going to tell you.
Guess what, bitch?
That fucked me up. A coffin is a funerary box used for viewing or keeping a corpse, either for burial or cremation. A distinction is often made between coffin and casket. The latter is generally understood to denote a rectangular box, while a coffin is usually six-sided, tapered at the top and bottom. The word's use as meaning chest or box in which the dead human body is placed for burial is from the 1520s. Before that, the main use in English was as a chest or box for valuables, or pie crust, a mold or casing of pastry for a pie.
I like that a lot.
And there you have it. Pies, coffins, not so different.
It's extremely funny to me that someone was, like, making a pie and then went to a funeral and was, like looked at a coffin and was like, you know what that reminds me of? The pie that I made earlier.
It's refreshing to look back in human history and see that I'm not the only one who is reminded of food anytime I look at anything, anything at all.
It's very, I mean, you can see it. Like, there's the kind of squared bottom part.
It's got
and then you fold over the thing on top.
That lip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And there's delicious things inside. So, so coffins are one of those things that have been around for, like, a super long time. You look at, like, sarcophagi in ancient Egypt. The Celts have been burying people in coffins for centuries. Really, if you weren't on, like, cremation or sky burial, you were putting people in coffins. Hmm. And most coffins over the history of time have looked pretty similar. They're a rectangular box. There's really only, like, a couple ways to make a box that you're going to put a dead body in and then put it in the ground forever.
Yeah.
So, that's it. I told you we'd have to be quick.
Cool.
Well, thank you guys. Coffins are boring.
Thank you guys so much for listening. Support our Patreon.
No.
Okay.
No.
You got me there.
No. There is a lot of weird stuff and cool stuff that's happened with coffins over the years. So I figured that's what we talk about today.
Yes.
So we don't have to stop recording. This is a fun little factoid, just in researching. I didn't know where else to put this. But do you know why coffins are buried 6 feet deep?
Mm.
Or where that phrase comes from?
No.
So, what do you think it would be?
Well, we've talked about some issues where coffins are not buried deep enough and they pop up out of the ground. So, I assume that's part of it, is there's a certain depth that you need to make sure that if a flood happens, it doesn't just wash up the coffin.
Mm-hmm.
I think our New Orleans episode, we talked about that a little bit.
Yep.
Beyond that, I have no idea.
Animals is usually the reason given.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But today, in the United States, Most states actually only require a coffin to be covered with 18 inches of soil.
Hmm.
So your normal coffin's about, you know, a little under 2 feet. So really, coffins only have to be buried about 3 feet deep.
So we're half-assing it, is what you're saying.
Half-assing it. Ooh, I got Clevelandy there. Half-assing it.
Half-assing.
We are half-assing it. And really, that's because we've kind of eliminated a lot of the issues that come with not burying coffins deep enough. With being able to pack soil with like rollers and stuff, there's not really a risk of flooding, popping coffins above ground.
That makes sense.
Also, like, paying attention to where floods happen has helped with that. Not being like, oh, this floodplain seems like a good place to put a bunch of bodies.
Right.
Wild animals aren't really an issue anymore.
Like, because we've killed all of them.
We have killed all of them. But no matter how hungry a coyote is, if they smell a body, they're not going to be able to, like, open a coffin to get to it.
Yeah, those things are difficult to pop open.
Yeah.
Believe me, I've tried. What?
What? So, I had to do a little digging to figure out where this phrase comes from.
Good. Very good.
Thank you. And unsurprisingly, it does come from dumb, old-timey people.
Ah, back at it again.
No, and they didn't understand how germs worked. They were stupid. So, specifically, this comes from the final Great Plague of London. Because I guess London has had tons of plagues.
Bunch of dirty old white people.
So when you hear about like the plague, what time are you thinking usually?
I'm thinking like 1500s, right? Wasn't that like the Black Death? And
oh, no. No, the Black Death was like very early on.
Okay. Well, ignore me.
You are correct, but the Black Death was 1347.
Okay, so no, I was...
You were like 100 years.
I was only 200 years off. That's no big deal.
So, this plague that we're going to talk about happened from 1665 to 1666.
Very specific.
Which is, I mean, it's kind of silly because, like, white people had, like, colonized America by that point.
Right.
Which is silly. This plague killed about 100,000 people in London.
In one city.
Yeah,
oh my God.
Which that was like a quarter of London's population at the time.
Yeah.
But was a real drop in the bucket compared to like the capital P plague, the Black Death. That killed 75 to 200 million people.
Million. Wow.
Yeah. And when the range is that big, like it's because so many people were dead that people just didn't know how to count it.
Like, how do you track it at that point, yeah. Especially in that day and age?
And it was, like, trans-European. It was, like, the British Isles and mainland Europe. It was everywhere. It was a real mess.
Gross.
But this 1665 plague was still pretty bad. There are stories about, like, cities being infected with the plague and then just walling off their boundaries. Like, they didn't let people leave the city and opted to kill the whole city so that the plague didn't spread.
Okay, wow.
The town of Eames did that.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, well, they're all dead, so. So any plague means that you have a lot of bodies to bury. And it also means that they have to figure out, like, rules on how to bury that many bodies. Because you can't just be like, oh, we have a graveyard where we can put all this, you know?
Right. Like, who cares? Just throw them in there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because it's either, like, a very structured graveyard, which is too small, or anarchy, where people are just throwing bodies everywhere. And that just won't fly. So what I'm going to have you read here is an excerpt from Orders Conceived and Published by the Lord Major and Aldermen of the City of London, concerning the infection of the plague. And it was written in 1665. It's worded kind of weird because they're legitimately like orders, but it's still interesting.
That the burial of the dead by this visitation be at most convenient hours, always either before sun rising or after sun setting, with the privity of the church wardens or constables and not otherwise, and that no neighbors nor friends be suffered to accompany the corpse to church, or to enter the house visited upon pain of having his house shut up, or be imprisoned. And that no corpse dying of infection shall be buried, or remain in any church in time of common prayer, sermon, or lecture. And that no children be suffered at time of burial of any corpse in any church, churchyard, or burying place to come near the corpse, coffin, or grave. And that all the graves shall be at least 6 foot deep.
There you have it. So, as like a quick translation, basically burials had to happen in early morning or late at night, and they could only be done by like police or caretakers.
Right.
If anyone else did show up to the funeral, because this plague was really bad, they were either put under house arrest until they died or thrown in like actual jail.
Tight.
Which is wild.
I'm sure nobody had any problems with that, too. They were like, oh, well, I understand. I deserve to be house arrested.
Well, I mean, it was because they didn't understand germs.
Right.
And so they thought that the plague was coming from the dead bodies. So it was like, if you visited the dead body, they were like, you have plague now. You can't come out of your house or else you'll give it to more people.
Damn. Just even for going to a funeral.
Yeah. So, you know, corpses also weren't supposed to be kept in churches when church services were going on, or else they'd be like, oh, all these people who are in church got the plague now. And they had to be buried 6 feet deep so that the stink from the corpses wouldn't infect people above the ground. It's like, that's like the miasma pre-germ theory stuff you hear about.
Okay, so the idea with that was just, on principle of being around dead bodies, you're infected.
Uh-huh.
And then that was as far as it went. We didn't understand anything about germs at that point.
Yeah.
Okay.
We thought that there was a gas that came out of dead bodies, which there is, you know. But that gas does not make you sick.
Right.
But they thought it did. So by putting you 6 feet underground, the gas was prevented from reaching the surface and you were protected.
Which is interesting because the only gas I'm really worried about these days is the gas that comes out of living bodies when they come over to record a podcast he's been eating cereal with milk and knows he's not supposed to be doing that.
I did bad. I'm sorry.
Apologize.
I don't know what it is.
Apologize to our listeners because they can smell it through the fucking speakers.
So you are like full lactose?
Right? It's a dairy allergy.
Okay.
Apparently, where like it's different, but effectively, like, okay, some people, when they eat dairy and they're lactose intolerant, they produce a lot quickly of poop and just got to, like, get it out of their system. I'm the opposite, where it, like, ruins my digestive system and it shuts it down and I'm, like, constipated for days at a time. Thank you for listening to this podcast about my personal health.
Because I can do, like, I can drink a hot chocolate and be fine.
Yeah.
With milk, because if you make them any other way, you're a fool. I can drink that and be fine, like an 8 ounce hot chocolate, but cold milk just
fucks
you, wrecks
up.
Me. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Huh.
I think heating it up has something, it like breaks down some proteins. No one wants to hear this.
We'll do a separate episode about how dairy interacts with our bodies,
our guts.
Specifically my body and Max's body.
So, yeah, I don't want to talk about this anymore. So it's nice, a pleasant thing to think about, is that the origin of 6 feet under was people trying to make coffins safe.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice. And for quite a while, there was even more of a focus on making coffins safe for living people. Specifically, making coffins safe for living people who happened to be placed inside those coffins and buried.
On accident?
Yeah.
Oops. Thought you were dead.
That's, you know, that's kind of the problem with being buried alive, is that if you're stuck in there, it's not good.
Yeah, not a good system. Can't really knock and have somebody dig you up.
Hear someone hear it. So this was like a legitimate fear of a lot of people for like 100 years. There was this big spate of cholera. So people get cholera, and the way cholera kills you is by dehydrating you.
Okay.
So your skin gets kind of pale. You can have extreme fatigue. Your eyes would sink, you know? Like, you would look dead. And because we didn't have germ theory, if you had cholera and looked dead, you would get buried really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so people would hear horror stories of people who had been buried and then exhumed, like, years later. And there would be, like, scratch marks on the inside of the coffin.
Right.
Which is true. Like, that's happened.
Yeah. That scares me more than, I think, anything else in the world.
It's really primal.
It's being buried alive. That's fucking horrifying.
Yeah. You've got Edgar Allan Poe wrote a lot of stories about being buried alive. He was really focused on it.
Yeah. Real chill guy.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
I couldn't source this, but I was trying to figure out the time on this. I think, like, the 1700s. I think that's when Kill Bill came out, too. So people really had, like, being coffined on the mind.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I've never seen Kill Bill, so I think it's an older film.
Oh, you've never seen him?
No, you've just shown me the anime sequence.
Oh, yeah. That's fucked up.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fucked up stuff in that movie. It's a good time.
Yeah, I never saw it.
Yeah, she gets buried alive in part
two. Yeah, I know that that's got that punching thing.
Yeah, it's very cool.
But
it's a very cool movie. You should watch it.
Anyway. Happened in real life to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Maybe not a lot, but like...
And not the punching escape thing.
No.
Just dying.
They just died.
Just dying a very sad death.
A lot of people were afraid of this. Cholera was huge. And so this fear of being buried alive was real.
Yeah. You know?
So what I'm going to have you read now is an excerpt from the Journal of Tobias Lear. This was written in 1799.
On Thursday, December 12th, the general rode out to his farms about 10 o'clock and did not return home till past 3. Soon after he went out, the weather became very bad, rain, hail, and snow falling alternately with a cold wind. Between 2 and 3 o'clock on Saturday morning, he awoke his wife and told her he was very unwell. I found the general breathing with difficulty and hardly able to utter a word intelligibly. A mixture of molasses, vinegar, and butter was prepared to try its effects in the throat, but he could not swallow a drop. Whenever he attempted it, he appeared to be distressed, convulsed, and almost suffocated. In the course of the afternoon, he appeared to be in great pain and distress from the difficulty of breathing and frequently changed his posture in the bed. On these occasions, I lay upon the bed and endeavored to raise him and turn him with as much ease as possible. About 10 o'clock, he made several attempts to speak to me before he could effect it. At length, he said, "I am just going. Have me decently buried, and do not let my body be put into the vault in less than 3 days after I am dead." He then looked at me again and said, "Do you understand me?" I replied, "Yes." "'Tis well," said he. About 10 minutes after this, he expired.
So this clearly demonstrates a fear of being buried alive.
Right.
That, like, don't bury me until 3 days after I've been dead.
Right.
Until you're, like, totally sure. So this was from the Journal of Tobias Lear, but I'm going to admit here that I did intentionally mislead you a bit.
What?
So this was written in 1799, but do you know who Tobias Lear was?
No, who is Tobias
Lear? No one knows who Tobias Lear is.
Is he a writer? Is this fiction?
He was a doctor.
Okay.
He was the personal doctor of George Washington, the first president of the United States. These were George Washington's last words.
Seriously?
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
What? Yeah. Holy shit.
He rode out to his fields December 12th, 1799. He rode out to his fields at Mount Vernon, and while there, like, caught pneumonia or something got him, and he came back, and a couple days later, he woke up in bed, woke up his wife, Martha Washington, and was like, "I don't feel great." And then 2 days after he took that ride, Saturday, December 14th, he died.
Hmm.
And they, you know, they tried to do, like, the old-timey doctoring thing of, like, the molasses, vinegar, and butter, like, being like, "This is..."
Just try something, I guess. Yeah.
But his last words were, "Don't bury me for 3 days," because he was paranoid about being buried alive.
Huh, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's wild, because like, you think about fears like this, and you think that they would be like a folk superstition or something.
Yeah, someone real fanatic or like an outlier, not the mainstream, not the president.
Yeah, they affected everybody. Like, this is like Abraham Lincoln thinking that Native American burial mounds were like where giants lived.
Oh, yeah.
It's wild. But because this fear was so pervasive, and because people like George Washington, who had a lot of money, also had this fear, a cottage industry of quote-unquote safety coffins sprang up. These safety coffins were created to kind of assuage the fear people had of being buried alive or burying their loved ones alive. They really came to a head in the back end of the 1800s. So in 1868, a man named Franz Vester was the first person to patent the safety coffin under U.S. patent number 81437A for a, quote, improved burial case. So here's a drawing of how it was supposed to look.
Okay. I am a little bit familiar with at least one crucial element of this drawing here that you're showing me. And that
Oh, because you've seen The Nun?
No. 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 Hell no. I don't watch those shitty movies.
There's like a bell ringing in that movie.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
No, but I've heard of other cases of this safety coffin where there's a rope that the deceased can hold, and at the other end of that rope is a bell above ground, so that if you hear that bell, is not dead.
You gotta dig him up.
Dig him up.
So I pulled the actual language from the patent and put it in there because it's a lot like you said, but it's very funny to read it in like technical terms.
The nature of this invention consists in placing on the lid of the coffin, and directly over the face of the body laid therein, a square tube, which extends from the coffin up through and over the surface of the grave. Said tube containing a ladder and a cord, one end of said cord being placed in the hand of the person laid in the coffin, and the other end of said cord being attached to a bell on the top, so that, should a person be interred before life is extinct, he can, on recovery to consciousness, ascend from the grave and the coffin by the ladder, or, if not able to ascend by said ladder, ring the bell, thereby giving an alarm, and thus save himself from premature death by being buried alive. Should life be extinct, the tube is removed, the door closed, and the tube used for a similar purpose.
I like this for a lot of reasons. We all know, like, the bell thing, where you're, like, ringing the bell above the grave.
Yeah.
This specific design did have a ladder, which you were just supposed to, like, use. I think that's very funny.
Climb up out of it.
Yeah.
That's like, crazy.
I can't imagine being in a coffin and then, like, worming up and around and pulling up and, like, emerging. It's very goofy.
Yeah. You're digging, like, a little apartment building at this point. Yeah. Just, like... How much dwelling space is in this grave?
It's very goofy. But I also like that if they were like, okay, it's been like a couple weeks, they're definitely dead, you could just pick it up and use it again.
Yeah.
I think that's very cute. It's not wasteful.
It's kind of a hilarious idea, but I also love, like, this is one of the early instances of us looking at the death care industry and how things work and kind of thinking like, well, what creative applications can we come up with to like make this better? You know, seeing problems that arise and being like, well, we're gonna try some things that are different. I mean, certainly like when we're talking about things like green burial and a lot of the new wave of things going on, there are some people who look at those things with the same sort of attitude of like, that's weird, that's goofy, I don't like it.
Yeah.
So, you know, with hindsight of like how silly this idea is in execution, it's like easy to laugh at it, but there's also a part of this that I respect and admire.
It's true
that this dude's trying to like experiment and come up with new things.
I mean, I guess ultimately you are trying to give families peace of mind,
right?
Like, trust me, he's dead.
Yeah. And like giving them giving them an out, like, if there were any chance that this person was not, you'd know.
Uh-huh. That's a good point. I like that. A lot of safety coffins were designed like this, with a little bell that you would ding.
Yeah.
And stuff. But, you know, people are prone to inventing things.
Yes.
And fear is, like, not the mother of invention, but, like, the stepmother.
That's a good way. That's a good way of putting it, yeah. I think. Yeah.
When you get freaked out, you're, like, trying new things. People did keep inventing new safety coffins. So here's another design for patent number 638265, awarded December 5th, 1899, and published by Marie Constant Hippolyte Nicole for an invention simply titled Coffin.
Just Coffin.
Just Coffin. No fun name.
That's good branding. It's kind of like a kind of couture.
Coffin.
Coffin. All right. I'm looking at the inside of a coffin. Is that like a... Is that like a device that you headbutt if you're still alive?
Yes.
What's going on there?
So, when you were buried, there's like a little glass window at the top, the very top of the coffin.
Uh-huh.
So, like, if you were looking through the window, you would be looking down at the top of the person's head. And if you woke up inside the coffin, here's what they expected to happen.
If a mistake has been made, the supposed corpse will be able to obtain air and summon assistance in the following manner. At the time of recovery, the person will naturally raise the head. In making this movement, the person strikes the arrangement and releases a hook from the handle. This handle, thus liberated by the action of the counterweights, swings against and breaks the glass. The person can then breathe, since the glass being broken now admits air to the interior of the coffin. Moreover, the glass in breaking makes sufficient sound to attract attention.
This feels a little more bonkers.
I don't know how well this would work.
Right?
So wait, you're burying this coffin, right?
So this one is not buried yet. This was specifically for, like, you would keep it in, like, an above-ground mausoleum.
Okay.
But okay. Still.
Yeah. And unlike the bell, which you can ring repeatedly until you get assistance, you just gotta hope that your glass shattering is well-timed enough that someone's around to hear it.
I guess. And also, like, I guess you're just in there and, like, yeah, you have air, but also the air is full of broken glass.
Yeah. does not seem like a very good solution.
No, and, like if I was walking around a cemetery and I heard a piece of glass breaking, I wouldn't be like,
well, I probably would, but I'd be like, oh, what was that, a ghost?
Yeah.
And then walk away. I wouldn't be like, I better dig up all of these bodies and make sure every one of them is dead.
It's very silly, and, like, I don't know if you were, like, if the expectation was, like, you would crawl out on your own, because then you're just crawling over a lot of broken glass.
Crawling on broken glass.
Come on, man.
That's a good song. Annie Lennox.
It's good. It's good.
Walking, though.
Yeah.
Probably not talking about this situation.
It's about her, like, seeing this patent and being like, that's weird.
I'm going to write a song about it.
It's goofy. Like, this feels a little extreme, but people are clearly, like, thinking about how to deal with this problem.
Yeah.
And it's still going on, too.
Oh?
Which is kind of wild. I found a European patent from 1979 for a coffin alarm system where you would, like, pull, like, a bus cord inside your coffin and it would set an alarm off. And even more recent, there was one here in the States on November 11th, 2014.
Very recent.
For a safety coffin, yeah. This is for a, quote, portable alarm system for coffins, and is U.S. patent number 8884768.
I like that you're reading these patent numbers. Like, go look them up if you want to see them.
Well, because it sounds like, who's making this in 2014, you know?
Right.
But, I mean, this is much more modern. You know, with this one, you push a button inside your coffin, and then a light comes on inside the coffin.
Okay.
And the patent says that the light is to, quote, provide illumination for the tomb or coffin to allay the effect of panic for the entombed person.
Like, okay.
I don't know if that would really help me.
So a light comes on.
Inside your coffin. And then a signal is radioed to a receiver. And then presumably someone would come, like, dig you up, I guess.
Okay. I hate it, but I think I just hate being buried alive more than anything else in the world, so it's uncomfortable to think about. I guess that's good. I don't know. I kind of like the interactivity of, like, a bell and something like that. Just something to keep me busy while I'm waiting for somebody to dig me up.
Yeah, like, I don't know if it's, like, a call light at a hospital or on, like, an airplane.
Yeah.
Where, like, if you push it once, it doesn't work again.
Yeah. I don't know. That's scary.
So, I mean, this doesn't happen much anymore, because if you're going to get embalmed, you're dead anyway, you know?
Yeah. Seals the deal.
Yeah. But it's popular with the Muslim community.
Okay.
Because in some stricter sects of Islam, the body is not required, but strongly advised to be buried within 24 hours so that decay doesn't set in. Because the sanctity of the body is kind of revered, and you're not supposed to look on like a mutilated corpse.
Okay. Okay, so in these particular sects, the practice of embalming is probably not very popular.
No, right? They don't embalm.
Yeah. Okay, got it. Good to know.
It's kind of like how Jehovah's Witnesses don't get organ transplants.
Yeah.
Because the body should be kept as is.
In case you gotta get your call back into action.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, I like that people are making coffins safe. But, and I know we've talked about it before on this show, but I wanted to revisit it.
Yes.
For a little while, folks were very focused on making coffins much more dangerous.
Yes.
And, it, you know, it relates to this because it's coffin tech.
I was hoping we'd come back to this.
Yeah. So Ohio, and in particular, like, Columbus, where we are, had a weird rash of body snatching in the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, bodies were just getting stolen out of graveyards. Most notably, someone named John Scott Harrison. So John Scott Harrison was the son of President William Henry Harrison and the father of President Benjamin Harrison. He wasn't president. He was just, like, a guy, I guess.
Oh, like right in the middle?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. But his dad and his son were both president.
Yeah.
So he nepotism. Must
have felt like a real dork.
Yeah, that's true. Failed nepotism. You goofed. And
he was even kind of more of a dork because his body got stolen.
You dummy.
So at one point after he died, his body was stolen, and then they found it, like, years later at the Ohio Medical College in Cincinnati. Like, the skeleton.
Uh-huh.
And it still had, like, the note saying that it was John Scott Harrison's body, which I don't know if I just never expected anyone to fact check that or what.
Huh.
But, I don't know. Nasty natty. It's bad.
I respect that, honestly. If you're going to steal a body and use it for medical science, I kind of respect that.
Like, go big.
Yeah.
So, having, like, the son and dad of a president's body get stolen understandably created kind of a panic. So people were freaking out and decided to make body stealing really dangerous.
Yes.
So we've talked about him before, but one of these men was Philip K. Clover, who invented the coffin torpedo. So here's the text from the advertisement of the coffin torpedo.
I'm so glad we get to talk about these again.
Is one of my favorite things in the world. I love it.
The torpedo is placed at the head of the body, the lid is shut down, and the unconscious sleeper is, as we might say, prepared for war. A metallic hammer is coiled upon a stiff spring and locked by means of the bar underneath. To the extreme end of this bar, wires are attached to serve the purpose of tripping the hammer when the lid of the coffin is raised, and thus the hammer is released and explodes the cap at the upper end of the metallic tube upon which rests the loaded cartridge.
Yeah, basically it's a shotgun.
Yeah, you steal this body, you're going to get murked.
It's very silly. It's like, you know, if you disturb the coffin, then like a hammer would hit lead and gunpowder and it would just explode.
So fucking cool.
I love it, man. And I don't know if we talked about this guy. Did we talk about the grave torpedo?
I can't recall. Perhaps you must refresh my memory.
So this was another one. This was a guy in Circleville, which we know today as being the home of...
The Pumpkin Show.
The Pumpkin Show.
Oh, boy. It's literally the only thing going on in Circleville, Ohio, is every year they have a pumpkin show.
It pops off. It's insane.
Yeah, everybody comes out of the woodwork to celebrate big pumpkins, I guess.
Yeah.
It's what's up.
And it's like the streets are lined with pumpkin cookies and pumpkin coffee and...
It's too much, honestly.
Pumpkin pie and...
Too many pumpkin flavored things.
It's really... I enjoy going like once every 3 years.
Sure.
It's fun. I don't know.
Yeah.
So this guy in Circleville, Thomas N. Howell...
Was fucking fed up with pumpkins.
Was fed up with pumpkins, and he was fed up with people trying to steal bodies.
I hate both of those things.
So in 1881, he patented another explosive device for coffins. Look at that. How do you think this works?
It's hard to tell from the drawings here. See, it's spring. Got another sort of blast here.
Mm-hmm.
Is it aimed directly at the person trying to dig here? I'm confused by this. Can you explain this? Unpack this.
So this one's tough to see. But basically, you would have a coffin, and it would be covered in like a spider web of taut cords and wires.
Uh-huh.
And the wires were hooked up to a bomb, which was placed inside the coffin, inside the lid. If you were digging down and hit and severed one of the wires, then it would spark, ignite the bomb, and explode, killing you.
So it would kill the person trying to steal the corpse, but it sounds like it would also mangle the corpse.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I guess it was really more of like a theft deterrent in like a way where like, I don't know, if you had like a Nest camera, if instead of being able to see someone breaking into your house, if they tried to break into your house, it would just blow up your house.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if I can't have it, then no one can.
No one can. I respect that.
So I couldn't find any instances of this actually being sold.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if these are in graveyards today.
You do have to be kind of cool with the idea of desecrating a corpse if you buy one of these.
Yeah.
So it's understandable.
But they were advertised in the Columbus Dispatch.
Okay.
Which is wild. Here's the text of one of those advertisements.
Sleep well, sweet angel. Let no fears of ghouls disturb thy rest, for above thy shrouded form lies a torpedo, ready to make minced meat of anyone who attempts to convey you to the pickling vat.
I don't know enough about explosives to know if this would still be dangerous if they existed.
I have no idea like how long they stay active.
But it's kind of wild.
Yeah, this is incredible advertising. This is, in all my years of working in design and marketing, this is truly the best thing I've ever seen.
It's going to make minced meat of a human being.
Anyone who attempts to convey you to the pickling vat, too. Like, you know how people are always, like, busting into your grave and trying to put you in a pickle jar, show your bits to people? Aren't you sick of that?
Don't you want to kill them?
Wouldn't you rather explode and take them with you?
Wouldn't you just want to murder them in a really gruesome, horrible way?
This is cool as hell. Circleville's all right now, in my book.
I don't know. I'm going to need to like dig into old census records and stuff. I'm going to do it. I'm going to find where this guy lived. And especially Clover, who lived in Columbus. I want to know how close I live to him right now.
Yeah, they're local legends. We should be aware of their presence.
And, you know, that's great and that's very fun. But I also wanted to close on like a more fun and wholesome note. Not that this isn't fun.
Okay.
It's just not wholesome.
Yeah, I guess so.
So I guess we can close on a more wholesome note, which is fantasy coffins.
Fantasy coffins.
Are you familiar with these?
No, I'm not.
You are.
What?
Because CNN runs like a thing on them every once in a while. It's the coffins from Ghana. that are decorated to be like really fun things. Like, I do have some photos here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you and I have talked about these before.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Okay, so we have coffins in from left to right here. A lion, a Nike shoe, a Louis Vuitton bag, and a loaf of bread.
They're fun.
These are amazing. I love them.
If you search like fantasy coffins on Google Images, there are tons of these images that pop up of these like full-size coffins that are really vibrantly colored.
Yes.
And decorated.
Mm-hmm.
And also just shaped like something else. I like it. They're really beautiful.
I love it. It reminds me too. I remember I've done some sign painting and like dorked out over sign painters and whatnot. And I remember a while back like stumbling across an article about Ghanaian street painters and how like they don't paint signs and then install the signs. They just paint on the side of stucco buildings and stuff. But it's the same sort of aesthetic, like very brightly colored, vibrant.
Uh-huh.
Just it seems like it would be so much fun to just exist in that space and walk around Ghana and I don't know, everything's colorful and painted and decorated.
Yeah. Like very bright.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of the reasoning behind the same deal of why they do their coffins like this. So, the dominant people group in Ghana is the Ga people.
Ga.
The Ga. And they believe that death isn't the end and that the spirit world is strong and has influences in our world. So your ancestors can influence the way that you live your life. So when someone dies, the belief is you want to bury them in something that shows off their personality and that would make them really happy.
You want to have them be cool with you when they go.
Yeah, you want to please them, basically.
Uh-huh.
So that's how you get, like, if they really liked shoes or Louis Vuitton, you would put them in like a Louis Vuitton handbag coffin. Or if they were a baker, you could put them in that baguette coffin. They usually relate to the family member's profession or like an animal that they really loved.
Uh-huh.
Or like favorite food or favorite proverbs. It's fun.
I love it. I love this tradition.
It's pretty recent too, actually.
Really?
Yeah, so it only started in about the 1940s. So basically, when a relative is going to die, and you can see it coming, the family makes arrangements to meet with a coffin maker. Because this is an industry.
Yeah.
There are workshops that only do this. Then the family and the coffin maker design the coffin collaboratively, usually with the input of the person who is going to be in it too, which is neat.
Yeah.
And then the artist goes off and makes the coffin. These coffins are usually constructed exclusively by hand without like power tools or anything.
Hmm.
They can take about 2 to 6 weeks for the workshop to produce.
Wow.
And these things are usually regarded as like a piece of art, even though they also get buried.
Right.
They're like folk art, kind of.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And they're getting more and more popular worldwide as well. So artists like Kujo Afutu have collaborated with European artists to develop art shows highlighting this in Paris. And so people in Paris will go and see the coffins and then donate to the towns that they come from in Africa, which is very cool.
Yeah.
Two big names in this industry are Pa Jo and Ata Oko. So Oko was a big name in kind of getting this movement started. And he was really famous for making really intricate coffins. So here's a photo of a coffin he made in 1960.
It's a ship.
It's like a ship, but it also has like gun turrets.
Yeah.
And masts.
It's very ornate.
Yeah.
This is impressive.
And under that is Pa Jo with a lion coffin that he made. And it's really neat because these guys really do treat this as an art form.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see this too because Pa Jo actually had a full documentary made about him. So I want you to watch the trailer and we'll talk about that to close this episode down.
It's very cool.
Isn't that neat? You can really see that, like, the amount of work that they're putting in, like, doing all these by hand.
Yeah. Know? He's understandably and visibly proud of his craft too.
Yeah.
Because they are beautiful objects.
Yeah. It's really neat. Like, I don't know. I don't do art, but I don't know how you would feel about being commissioned to do something that's going to be seen once, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's very cool. It's to make something that has personal significance for the person it's for and their family. Like that, I don't know, for me as an artist, that's kind of the goal. Like, you have to do commercial work to kind of survive.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do things that are popular and make money. But I don't know. For me, the most satisfying thing to be creative with is things that have a meaningful impact on other people. And
yeah.
It's worth the work if it's going to mean that much to people. You know?
Yeah.
That's so cool. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it is like these coffins are not shown to anyone before they're used. So, like, you wouldn't have it on display beforehand. You would put the body in it, and then it's only exhibited during the procession.
Hmm.
So it really kind of adds to the awe and celebration of the funeral, because you're getting to see this, like, grand thing that you're shipping your relative off to the afterlife in.
Yeah. I would assume that it would help with closure, too. That, like, having this one special moment of sending them off is...
Yeah.
You know, that's significant.
Oh, it's so much more personal, too.
Absolutely.
Than just, like, a brown box.
Yeah.
You know?
But which color brown box would you prefer?
Mahogany? Teak wood? Sandalwood. Like a sandalwood coffin.
Yeah. Our coffins are boring. Americans, step your game up.
I think Pa Joe deserves a little induction into the Pre-Dead Boys Hall of Fame.
I would say so.
Because of that.
I would throw him in there.
It's very cool.
He's a pioneer of an amazing art.
Yeah. It's neat.
It's very cool.
It's more wholesome than torpedoes.
Yeah. And it's still pretty fun. So I'll give you a pass on that.
Thanks,
but,
man.
But this is all amazing stuff. I'm so glad we got to revisit some of the corpse theft stuff that we touched on, too. It's awesome.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cool stuff with what we do with coffins and how we tinker with them. Well, thank you for putting all of these notes together, Max. This is amazing.
Yeah, no problem.
And thank you guys for listening. We love hearing from you. What do you think about these coffins? Would you want to be buried in a big, ostentatious, colorful coffin? Would you want to be buried with a coffin torpedo? Are you worried about people stealing your goods after you die? Tell us what you think about all this stuff. You can message us on Twitter or Instagram at PreDeadBoys. Email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. Search Pre-Dead Boys Podcast on Facebook. Join our Facebook group. And you can join our Discord, which is always bumping and very active. You can message us for an invite to that, and I'll throw that your way. But we'd love to have you in any of those things.
Yeah.
If you want to support what we do, we would really appreciate it. If you want to financially support the podcast, the best way you can do that is join our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/predeadboys and pledge $1 or $5 a month. It helps us cover costs and grow the podcast in cool, sustainable ways. I want to give a shout out to our new patrons.
Whoa.
Adam Nichols and M.E.R. Thank you so much for both of them have also been in the Discord and chatting it up. And it's been cool to get to know those people a little bit more.
Thanks,
and
y'all.
You guys are awesome. Even if you didn't support us financially, you'd still be awesome. But we really appreciate this little extra from you guys. With that, we are now 2/3 of the way to making bonus episodes.
Ooh.
If we reach a total of $100 a month in donations from our patrons, then Max and I will start producing monthly bonus episodes only for Patreon supporters,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, we cover from a death positive perspective some movies and music and games and books that we're interested in. We really want to do that. I want to make those.
Dorian is very riled up about it.
I've got a list.
He has the first episode in mind already.
Yes.
It's very good.
I've started the notes. I'm like, I'm ready to work on that when we can get the funding for it. So make sure you check out patreon.com/predeadboys and consider contributing. If you contribute now at any level, you'll get like little previews of upcoming episodes. And if you support at the $5 or more level, you'll get cool wallpapers for your phone and or desktop device.
Yep.
I make them myself. And I got to do something cute for February. I don't know if I want to go Valentine's Day or like it's also like the anniversary of our podcast starting on Valentine's Day.
Oh, like a little birthday cake.
Yeah, it might be a Pre-Dead Boys birthday cake. I don't know. I'm open to suggestions on that if you guys have ideas. But yeah, make sure you check that out. Patreon.com/predeadboys. If you want to make a just little one-time donation, we still have our Ko-fi page open, ko-fi.com/predeadboys. I want to give a shout out to Michelle P.
Aww.
She says, your podcasts have made a boring day at work very bearable. And then she did like the like tongue sticking out smiley, you know?
Oh, colon
it's
P?
Like colon lowercase p. Yeah, it's adorable.
Aw.
But yeah, thanks for that, Michelle.
Thanks, Michelle.
Yeah, I'll make sure to thank you in person next time I see you too, and not just over recording. But whether you can give us money or not, doesn't really matter. The best way you can support this podcast is tell your friends, your family, coworkers that there's this podcast you really like, and it's about death. But wait, don't walk away. It's fun.
Please come back.
It's very lighthearted and thought-provoking, and you'll learn a lot of things, but you also might laugh at it because it's a good time. Just word of mouth is the best way that we get this podcast out there. That helps immensely. You don't have to give money for us to continue to grow this thing and, you know, make friends with people all around the world through it.
Absolutely.
So we would really appreciate that. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Bratcurse. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com and look them up on Spotify or wherever you stream music. And I think that that's going to do it for us.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, Max.
Oh.
I was thinking about how there's a lot of these ways that we've tried to get it so that if you are buried alive, you'll let somebody know and they'll come and save you, right?
Yes.
Well, the fact of the matter is I don't have very much confidence that anybody's going to come and save me with a lot of these. I think that if I'm in that situation, I would just be anxious.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't feel good about it.
Okay.
So here is my innovation. I'm going to throw my hat into the ring with new coffin innovations, right?
I've got a patent number ready for you.
Okay, great. So here's what I want you to write down. It's going to be a coffin torpedo, but backwards.
Okay.
Right? So that if I wake up and I'm not dead.
Oh, no.
I don't think anybody's going to save me at that point. You know?
Like an ejector seat. Oh. Oh, no.
Actually, yeah, your idea is better. My idea was a little bit too morbid. Okay, yeah, here's what we do. We put a spring behind me, underneath me, and if I push a button, then it rockets my body through the ground into the sky.
To freedom.
See, that's you throwing your hat into the
go.
Coffin innovation game. That's actually a really good idea.
It's like a thrill ride.
Now I'm excited to be buried alive.
Yeah, get me in there.
That's it. Thanks for listening to the Pre-Dead Boys. Look at us revolutionizing the death care industry. That's the best idea we've come up with so far.
It's killer. I love it.
Hell yeah. We're gonna register a patent. we'll get out of here. Max and Dorian here reminding you, you're gonna rot.
I'm not sure on the time, but I think late. I'm not sure on the time. The
fucking bird, man.
Kill it. It doesn't matter. The bird's okay.
Hey! I'm podcasting here! I think it went away.
I got very scared. You yelled at it. It was very impolite.
Well, I'm podcasting here.
Damn birds.
He flew away. It's like, oh, my bad. Didn't know you were podcasting.